Hello, everyone, and thanks for listening. I'm Sonia Pfeiffer, the owner and creative director of Elder Gallery of Contemporary Art, and I'm on the phone with one of our gallery artists, William A. Noguera. Hi, William. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
William, a lot of people find it fascinating that you create in the way that you do, and I know we introduced you in a solo show a few years ago, but let's start with you sharing to those who are new to you and your work with who you are and where, from where you create your work.
Well, thank you. This, of course, is William A. Noguera, and I am presently in a 4x9 cell at San Quentin's death row where I create my artist's voice or my artistic voice. And yeah, that's pretty much it. My works are about my surroundings and this narrative that I've been working under for the past quarter of a century, which basically is me weakening the walls of the structure or the prison that holds me, and therefore destroying the prison and allowing me to basically be free again.
Before we go too deep into your process, William, just a couple of basic questions. First of all, how long have you been on death row?
I've been incarcerated since 1983, but on death row since 1988, so approximately 34 to 35 years.
And how about your artist practice, the act of creating? How long have you been creating artwork?
Well, I don't remember a time when I wasn't creating art. I started my fundamental practice at the age of 2. My mother was an artist, and she really honed my skills in drawing and mark making. And from there, it just carried on into my adulthood.
When you do your work, you mentioned your surroundings, the confines of your cell. How have you even learned about art making over the past 30 plus years? Things that people go to school to learn, right? Like color theory or various techniques or the masters and that type of thing. How have you gained knowledge?
Well, there's two parts to that. Obviously, there is the learning of other masters and artists in contemporary art, everything from Rothko through Pollock, Clifford Steele. I learned those in libraries, reading and understanding the work, the process. But art is kind of a tricky little wheel. It's either you're in the circle or you're not in the circle. I don't really believe that a person must know about other artists in order to create. I happen to do it because I'm kind of, in a way, an art historian. I read everything. I learn about all the artists and what they do. But for me, the process of art comes from within. It's something that, it's a narrative that I came up with, that only I experiment with, and that is art as a practice, art with purpose. For me, really, art without really a true purpose is just empty gestures. So my work is really about this purpose that I have, and as I mentioned before, and that's the destruction of my surroundings. My art helps me destroy this place. And actually, with these last series that I'm doing here, this is kind of my final act, because my intent over the past quarter of a century has been actualized.
Before we sort of reveal all of that for our listeners, let's just give a little context to some of your work, because you talked about, you know, this being a very personal practice for you. But what about actually learning how to make marks? I mean, your early work was a lot of this ink stippling, very realistic images. Over time, your work has evolved. How did you teach yourself the techniques?
Well, it was trial and error. It was just something I felt inside. My dreams were used to be completely black and white, stark black and white images that would be in my mind's eye as I dreamt. And then there's a lot of shocks in my life during that time period, you know, being on death row, people being executed around me. Suddenly a lot of color started flowing into these dreams, and just it began to just grow within me, and this voice kept pushing. And really, I just sat down and allowed just my free hand to evolve, and it took me to where I am now with my art, which is completely abstraction and contemporary art.
So let's talk about this intention that you have. You know, when you and I first met several years ago, you talked about this idea of destroying San Quentin's death row, the cage that holds you, and literally doing that one stone at a time. Can you talk about why that intention is so important for you and explain to those who are listening really what you mean by that, destroying these walls? Because I think it's both literal and metaphorical.
Yeah, you're completely right. But what I mean by that is that I actually take stones, pieces of cement, ground them into a fine powder, and I mix it with my gesso, with my paint, and I create art with it so that the viewer is actually seeing the site of conflict. It's the exact place where I live, because in these pieces, I'm including the pieces of San Quentin, which in a bigger context, just it weakens the walls. But further than that, the art piece itself, from these different series I've used, it shows the viewer the process of destroying the walls. I use this, my work is kind of a shot through with violence, if not intoxicating oppositions, which is how I see the world. And I show the viewer that in my paintings. My paintings are these colorful pieces that some people look as beauty, but beauty's not the intention. It's to show you how the erosion happens, how the destruction happens. It, to me, this is action painting in its real form, because the viewer's actually seeing where I live, what I do, and further, I use chemical solvents to destroy the painting. And that's what's left, what you see. And it is, in a sense, the destruction of San Quentin.
You have a couple of series in this solo show. The first one I want to talk about is Till Memory Leaves Another Trace. The subtitle to that is The Death of George Jackson. First of all, can you explain to our listeners who George Jackson is? They may not know. As a criminal defense and civil rights lawyer, it's a name I know well, but I don't know that it's in everyone's lexicon.
Yeah, George Jackson was, in different people's minds, a different person. Some people considered him an author, an activist. Others believe him to be a killer, a murderer. So you have this two sides. And George Jackson was murdered at San Quentin, or he was killed, however you want to see it, in a what you believe was an attempted escape. Others believe that it was just a murder. They murdered him. But during that escape break, or however you want to call it, several people died. Two other inmates died, as well as officers that worked here, guards. So this is a very, you know, a lot of people believe that he's one of the first activists in prison, you know, and he was here at San Quentin because of, he was accused of a murder of another person at Soledad. He is one of the Soledad brothers. So it's just, it brings up a lot of emotion. I thought it was a very good idea to bring this to the table. And this series is about him and the opinions of who he was as a person, as a convict, as well as an activist.
You know, when you say he was murdered, I mean, I think really what you're saying is there is a theory that he was assassinated because he was an activist, because he was, essentially bringing people together to demand change, justice, equal treatment, that kind of thing. When you say there's one theory that he was murdered, it's actually that he was assassinated because what he was doing was effective.
Yes, that's one of the...
You have 60 seconds remaining.
But as the artist, as the person that's bringing this to the table, I like to play devil's advocate. I want to give the viewer a choice of the narrative that they take. Yeah, we're here.
Okay, great. All right. Okay. When we got cut off, we were talking about Till Memory Leaves Another Trace, The Death of George Jackson, and you were sharing how important it is to you to give the viewer a choice or options in how they view him through your artwork. So can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. With these works, I play devil's advocate, and I give the viewer really the choice and the narrative they follow. In one instance, they can choose the side of George Jackson as an activist, an author, or him as a murderer, criminal, cop killer. these narratives are outlined in number combinations, which I've done in the past, and I place these works in the same narrative of really a place where people can feel safe to take one side or the other side. But whichever side you take, there's no wrong answer, because there is arguments for both sides. And you can't escape the slight anxiety and tension that each work gives because of that position. Of course, the pieces are underneath the paint. You can see the actual San Quentin newsprint that has pictures of George Jackson, the officers that were killed. So this work really does come through with a bit of past longing for how things used to be, and a little bit of dreaded too because of the subject matter. These are going to be...
This call and your telephone number will be monitored and recorded.
These are highly controversial pieces. There's going to be those who really oppose them and others that embrace them. But whichever narrative you choose, you're okay in doing so.
Well, and the reality is, you don't have to choose a narrative. I mean, they're not mutually exclusive, right? He could be both. I mean, isn't that also a suggestion to the viewer?
Very good point. Yes, he can be both. And I'm just there to lay it out for people to look at. But you can't escape that they're beautiful pieces. They're, you know, I've taken off with solvents some of the paints. You can see the actual newsprint. It's just, I think they're really great pieces. I believe that people will be moved by them. And I think they give a glimpse into the past that we've sometimes forgotten, and that can be a mistake in itself.
Yeah, agree. And no, they're incredible pieces. And I think for people to get that window into history and also, you know, this lore from San Quentin adds just a sense of, you know, curiosity to the pieces. Let's move on to the other series we have, which is When the Mountains Crumble to the Sea. Talk our listeners through that series.
Yeah, this marks like the final act, because I've been pushing this narrative of destroying San Quentin, the walls, breaking down the case that holds me, and I've actualized my mind's intent. Recently, the courts have thrown out my sentence. And very soon, I'll be sentenced to life instead of death. And look, my position is that I created this. By weakening these walls, this is happening. But even more so, now the governor of California has stepped in, and he is actually putting the final, like, I guess, act in this narrative that he's going to dismantle death row. Did I have something to do with that? I believe I did. By weakening the walls from within, these things are happening. There's not going to be a San Quentin death row anymore. So these pieces are my final act. And this is, the mountain, of course, is San Quentin, and it's crumbling. And in these pieces, the viewer can actually see pieces of the wall on the painting. And they're just very powerful pieces. There's no escaping what I've done here. And I think the viewers are going to find these pieces not only moving, but extremely emotional and powerful.
You know, I want to talk just sort of personally about this change for you, because on the one hand, there's this victory of being sentenced to life and you know, and succeeding in what you've been aiming to do in terms of breaking down the walls of San Quentin. But I wonder if there's also some trepidation, like some trepidation in leaving what you've known for so long, not knowing where you might go. What is this experience like for you on a personal level?
Yeah, it's very stressful. I mean, one of them, they say that the most stressful thing in the life is to move from one house to another. This is not my home, but it's been the place where I've dwelled for so long that, yeah, there's a lot of tension, a lot of stress. I don't know what the future holds for me. Life in prison is what I've been doing, except there's been this, you know, this fog of the death penalty around me. That's not going to exist anymore. So whatever it brings, I am sure that I'll be fine, but there is a bit of stress and tension. So these final pieces, when mountains crumble to the sea, I call them the final act, my final act as the guy who brings this narrative of destruction and creation all in the same piece. And I do so, I think, extremely well with solvents, because I use bleach to destroy the pieces. And you're going to find them very interesting when you see these works.
You know, I want to talk about another thing. You've talked about your work and how you literally break down the walls of San Quentin and how that's your intention. But, you know, you also, I think, break down these walls of misunderstanding, these walls of presumption when people think about who is on death row. Because over the course of time that you've been there, you know, when I talk about you and your work, you are the model not only of an incredible artist, but someone who embodies repentance, someone who embodies rehabilitation, someone who embodies the ability to do something good in the world when other people looked at you and were ready to say, we've got, you know, no time for you, you know, that there's nothing that we want from you and you're essentially locked away and forgotten. I mean, you have published a book, you speak to ethics classes, you know, you've worked on this podcast series, Death Row Diaries. I mean, you have really also broken down expectations and stereotypes. I wonder if you've had any thoughts about how you might continue this other work as you transition to another facility. How might you continue to be this this model?
Well, I appreciate that. But yeah, it's when it comes to being a model of how to change or how to really become repentive and rehabilitated and embrace my actions, both good and bad, and really understand who I am. I guess it's one of those things that I will continue doing what I do. I'll find ways to educate, to rehabilitate other people that I can reach some way, somehow. I don't know how I'm going to do that yet, but I'm sure that I'll be able to do it. But I think the first step in all of this process is acceptance of responsibility. That's probably the biggest thing that I've had to come to terms with. Once I did that, the only thing I could say is never judge a book by its cover. There was a judge and 12 jurors who judged me when I was an 18-year-old boy, and I've spent the last maybe 40 years basically proving them wrong. Have I been successful? I don't know yet, but there's a part of me that can't stop. I'm moved by proving them wrong every day that I exist in this world.
You talked about the fog of the death penalty. Those are the words you used, and that's being lifted now. How do you think that this change will impact your work? You know, now that your intention has been carried to fruition and the fog of the death penalty is no longer hanging over you, how might that manifest itself in the work that you create? Have you thought about that at all?
Yeah, it's a little scary. So when you have a purpose in life and suddenly you take that purpose away, but in the bigger picture, I'm still in a cage. So wherever they send me, I don't know if this is for sure or not, but maybe I'll start working on that cage too to break that one down. And once that happens, maybe someday those doors will open and I'll step through them. But we'll see.
Yeah. Great. Well, William, it's always good to talk to you. Thank you so much for sharing all of this with us, for sending your new works to the gallery. And we will look forward to people's feedback on them, and we'll share it with you, of course.
Well, thank you so much, Sonny. It's always a pleasure. And yeah, this should be very interesting for the gallery and for the audience to see these works.
Okay. Thank you.